ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
And we're about to get the welcome to country right now.
Indigenous Elder Carl Winda Telfer welcoming spectators to country at the State of Origin opening in Adelaide earlier this week.
Greetings, friends. Where you sit and stand tonight is on sacred country.
A lot of significant events like sports, concerts and openings across Australia start with a welcome to country. But today in Australia-wide, why a regional council in New South Wales has voted to no longer pay for them. I'm Sinead Mangan, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth. We start in Broken Hill, where members of the local Aboriginal community have criticised a decision by the local council to stop paying them for undertaking welcome to country ceremonies. Under the policy revision, Broken Hill's traditional owners, the Willakali people, would still be invited to perform the ceremony, but at no financial cost to the council. With Mayor Tom Kennedy saying a welcome to country should not come with a price tag. The response to the situation has been passionate, and Andrew Smith is our reporter in Broken Hill. Now, Andrew, what has led the Broken Hill City Council to this decision? And I believe it was made on Wednesday night, the decision.
It's one of those things that started out at a council meeting where there's 300 pages and we were sort of flicking through it just prior. And I'll just read, they're looking at amendments to their civic functions and the policies they hold. They haven't revised this policy since 2017. So they put this amendment on the table. I'll just read it. It says, part of the policy includes that traditional owners be invited to perform a welcome to country at the commencement of official events. Now that's fine. But then the second part goes on to say, at no financial cost to council. Apparently, that when people do perform a welcome to country, that they are reimbursed or they're paid for that service. Hmm. Well, council are saying from now on, moving forward, any council events or functions, which they're, you know, there could be 20 or 30 a year, they'll no longer pay people to perform this service. And we reported on the following morning, and the response has been the proverbial explosion of opinions on both sides. And it's really led now to the local Aboriginal Community Working Party becoming involved. It's turned into a war of words. And at this stage, really, you hope that this can be resolved by the two parties, the Working Party and Council, sitting down next week and sorting out some sort of resolution.
Well, you spoke to the Mayor, Tom Kennedy, and what did he have to say about the Council's decision and why they'd made that decision?
He said that a number of councillors were unaware that there was a payment attached to this. He went on to say that they want to make sure that every council-led event or function does have a welcome to country, but they don't believe that a fee should be attached to perform this duty. And it's normally performed by a local elder or someone who's chosen by the local elder to perform the welcome to country. He went to great lengths to explain that they don't want to get rid of the actual service itself. Here's part of what he had to say.
Look, when council goes to paying out people, it's solely the responsibility of the councillors. I don't agree with it. Majority of councillors don't agree with paying for a welcome. No amount of consultation is going to change that. The reality is, and this is for the community out there, they won't be paid. This is about money. We are not attempting to get rid of the welcome to country. They're not getting paid. They're not happy. Our point wasn't the welcome to country. We didn't want to bring that into it. It's still in the policy. What was an angst for me and an angst for the majority of the councillors is that paying for a welcome. If you're paying for a welcome, it's not a welcome.
That's Broken Hill Mayor Tom Kennedy. Now, I suppose a question, and you may not have this information at hand, how much were they paying? How much does it cost?
I actually asked him that, and it said it varied on what you had, anything from $150 to $250. If you want a smoking ceremony, it went to $300. In that range of $150 to $300. I think if you wanted part of the welcome to country to be in language, that was around about $250. That's the price range that he gave. He was adamant, and he stressed it, as you heard there a few times, that they don't want to get rid of it. They just don't think they should have to pay for the service. When you consider the blowback from this, Sinead, is that the local Aboriginal Community Working Party have issued a statement, and where they're upset is that there was no consultation prior to council making this decision on the Wednesday night. They are now seeking that council come to the table where this consultation or discussion can be had, even though a decision's been made. Tanoa Bugmy is a Willikali woman who has been chosen by her elders to perform the majority of Welcome to Country ceremonies in Broken Hill. This is what she had to say.
Welcome to Country is our paid role. This is our cultural competence that we're sharing with community and the country. So this is something that we should be entitled to be paid for. Just like if you pay to go to some art shows and, you know, you want to buy a piece, you've got to pay for that. So, like, I work and so does most of my family members who do the Welcome to Country. So you're taking away time from them, especially when we're, like, some of us are full-time workers. And we're in Reconciliation Week. We've got conversations happening now about, you know, the voice to Parliament. And I just don't see how that's progressive to Broken Hill and its economics, including of our people anyways. I see it as 10 steps backwards, and it gives an opportunity for, you know, our community to share what we know and knowledge we know and resources we have with council to build on our Broken Hill's growing economy.
That's Tanoa Bugmy. Now, the Broken Hill Mayor, Tom Kennedy, who we heard a little earlier there, Andrew, has been accused of being a racist. What's been his reaction to those claims?
He actually has denied those claims. He's pointed out that he has a number of close friends within the local Indigenous community. Here in Broken Hill, at the last census, I think the population of Indigenous people in this community was around about probably 11%. But in the far west, we have communities like Menindee and Mulcanya, which are probably 80% Indigenous. So, you know, it's always been over the journey, Sinead. Everybody's got on with everybody. And I think the sticking point out of this is, and I'll go back to the Community Working Party, the Aboriginal Community Working Party, are saying, why not just tap us on the shoulder and we could have sat down and talked about this? And Paul Kemp, who's the chair, there is a meeting this or next week, I should say, of the Murdi Paki Regional Assembly, which represents all 16 remote communities in the far west of New South Wales. Now, this will be tabled as part of that agenda. And then Paul Kemp has told us he'd like to speak to us post that meeting. But I also understand that there have been phone conversations between he and Mayor Tom Kennedy following what occurred on morning radio in Broken Hill. They have agreed to sit down at the end of next week and discuss this and try and find a solution. And let's hope for everybody involved that's the case.
So that would suggest that there could be a compromise here.
A compromise, and the mayor sort of even mentioned it, whether or not there'd be a fund set up, say for argument's sake, through council, and every time there was a Welcome to Country, they'd pay money into that fund. Then at the end of a 12-month period, that money would then go to a group like the Aboriginal Community Working Party for them to distribute or use amongst the local Indigenous populations as they see fit. Now, that was only a informal conversation I had with him after we'd finished on air this morning, but that will form part of his discussion with Paul Kemp at the end of next week.
Now, it is worth saying, before I let you go, because 8 out of the 10 councillors voted for this amendment, which would mean that the council would no longer pay for a Welcome to Country. But there were 2 opposing councillors. What did they have to say about it? And who are they?
Yes, there are 2 Labor councillors, Marion Brown and Daria Turley. And Daria Turley is a former mayor of Broken Hill. They moved a motion at the meeting on Wednesday night that this amendment or proposed amendment go on public display for the community to give feedback over the next 28 days. That's what they wanted to do. That was defeated. And of the 10, 8 voted for the amendment. And those 2 moved for that motion that it go on public display. But that was defeated.
Huge response into the ABC today. What were you hearing?
A lot of response, a lot of text messages, a lot of phone calls. I took one phone call from Nancy Bates, who's a Barkindji woman from this area who lives in Adelaide. She accused the mayor of being racist. She also said that the role that we play, the ABC, in allowing him to voice his opinions, racist opinions, didn't reflect very well on us. And I did say, well, I see our role as, when you're broadcasting or you're working out of a regional community, is to air those community issues and try and give a balanced view on both sides. And that's what we did today. Nancy was very vocal, very passionate, as are probably 99% of the people that have contacted us today. And we just hope that over the next week, these parties, and you remember, we're talking a community here of less than 18,000 people. We all live together. We all work together. They can sit down around a table, discuss what has occurred, and try and find a way forward that, I suppose, brings the harmony back to the community that we live in. That's what we need.
Absolutely. Andrew Smith in Broken Hill, thanks for talking this whole issue through on Australia Wide as well.
Pleasure.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
And it is worth noting that this week is Reconciliation Week. Across the border in Victoria, in the central town of Daylesford, an exhibit of portraits of local Aboriginal people photographed after they were removed from their land in 1860 has brought many visitors to tears. Ballarat reporter Rochelle Kirkham has this story.
It was an occasion to bring people together and connect the present with the past in Reconciliation Week. A smoking ceremony and welcome to country at Daylesford Museum this week officially launched a special exhibition featuring photographs taken in 1866 of Dja Dja Wurrung people who were forcibly removed from their land and taken to Corranderk Aboriginal Reserve in Victoria's east.
It was the beginning of two cultures coming together. So life was tricky and hard, and I think after a while Aboriginal people sort of seen that, you know, their life was going to change and their lifestyle. It was probably a little bit sad, and, you know, you could see your life changing, your culture changing. Lots of your family are possibly dead. So it would have been pretty hard times in those times.
That's Dja Dja Wurrung elder Uncle Rick Nelson, who is the custodian of the historic photographs. He says the emotion in the portraits tells the story of the time.
The emotions are really pretty sad and stern. You know, they're like almost like a wounded people almost, you know. They can see their culture fading away and weren't allowed to practice it and speak their language and that at times. There's lots of sadness in these old photographs, in these old people's eyes.
Corranderk was established as a station for Aboriginal people under the Protectorate system, which gave the Board for Protection of Aborigines power over where Aboriginal people could live and work. Dja Dja Wurrung people were moved off their country, which extends from north of Ballarat to north of Bendigo, and taken to Corranderk in 1864, after their local station was closed. It was a productive farming community in the early years, but when management changed, conditions worsened, with increased authority, cuts to food supply and inadequate medical attention.
I feel sadness in my heart for those people, but I'm trying to educate the wider community. I like putting these things together, these little exhibitions, and educating people. So it's fun for me as well as initial sadness when you see them and think what those people had to deal with.
Gary Lawrence, the curator of Daylesford Museum, says he has designed the exhibition to encourage visitors to sit down and reflect.
We've actually put chairs in front of each of the photos, inviting people to actually sit eye to eye with these people, and within a moment you're going to get a sense of part of their journey. We have had people in here in tears over the journey, so it is a difficult story, but I think you've got to know it, and that's how we will all come together through reconciliation.
Donna Spiller is the First Nations liaison for the exhibition and has worked with Uncle Rick Nelson to put it together.
There's two sides to every story, I suppose. One side is that it was a safe place for some Aboriginal people who were facing massacre, facing the loss of country and the loss of ability to hunt and in the Protectorate. Was it, by all good intentions, a place that they could feel safe? But as part of that, also it meant being moved off country, having their culture stripped from them, losing language, losing ceremony, and then the fight to stay together was lost when the Aboriginal Acts changed and families were separated and moved off from each other onto other stations. So again, just a continual story of loss, really.
Miss Spiller says reconciliation means to acknowledge our history and walking together to create our future.
Truth-telling is a really important part of healing. So I think for us to reconcile our shared history, we need to understand the truth of what happened in our history. and then we can all move forward together in that space of healing and acknowledgement. That's really important because for a long time, our history hasn't been acknowledged. Our children weren't taught about it in schools. We weren't taught about it in schools. So now is the time to really tell those stories and be able to move forward.
Local school children have contributed to the exhibition, drawing pictures of their interpretation of the Corindurk story and of reconciliation, bringing new light to a dark history.
It just gives me so much hope because I think the exhibition sits in a space where it is quite a sad space, but then you look up and you see what the children have contributed to the space as well, and it gives you hope.
The exhibition runs until June the 3rd.
That story from our reporter Rochelle Kirkham in Ballarat.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
Bush kids, they've got the benefit of seeing a lot of things, you know, and understanding how the environment works. They know where their meat comes from.
On ABC Radio.
And you're listening to Australia Wide with me, Sinead Mangan. Now, if you're keen to hear stories from all over the country, remember, you can listen to the Australia Wide podcast at a time that suits you. Every day, we put the latest episode of the program on the ABC Listen app. And to find the app, you go to the App Store, type in ABC Listen, and you'll see a pink icon. Download that, and voila, you're sorted. You can listen to all sorts of ABC content. But if you want to find Australia Wide, search for Australia Wide, and there you go. Great regional stories ready to go when you've the time to listen to them. And if you could subscribe to Australia Wide, that would be fantastic. And you'll have all those stories there whenever suits you.
Out here in like regional Victoria, it's a lot harder to find that sense of community and that sense of safeness. So having this event to look forward to, is, you know, you get to meet your community and actually be supported.
That's Frankie, a teenager from northeast Victoria. They were looking forward to heading along to the Rainbow Bowl this Saturday night in the Victorian town of Wangaratta. As Frankie said, opportunities to celebrate the LGBTQIA plus community don't come around all that often in rural Australia. So they were seriously disappointed when the event was postponed last minute because it was targeted by groups with radical views. Our reporter, Anna Chisholm, has been covering this story in Wodonga. Anna, the Rainbow Bowl had been targeted on social media. Was the concern from council that people attending would be at risk or wouldn't be safe? Is that what it was?
Yeah, safety really was the key concern here. In a statement, the Rural City of Wangaratta Mayor, Dean Rees, said, "We're extremely disappointed that there has been some hateful narrative around this event. We do not accept this, but we cannot risk an event that is about fun and celebration being a threat to anyone attending." And the email that was sent out to those would-be attendees of Saturday night's event read, "You may have seen some confronting commentary around this event, and because of this, we have chosen to prioritise the safety of all attendees." And of course, it does follow on from other Pride celebrations, which have been postponed in recent months due to either threats of protest or after being targeted online. And you might remember that last July, Melbourne's Shrine of Remembrance cancelled plans to light up the site in rainbow colours, citing sustained abuse and threats directed at its staff.
Frankie expressed there how rarely these events happen in regional Australia, particularly. It's not that often that there's something to go to, I suppose. What sort of effect has this had on the LGBTQIA plus community in northeast Victoria? Have you heard from them today?
Well, of course, speaking to Frankie, the concern from Frankie was really the impact this would have on their peers. They did make the point that it's so much harder to get that sense of safeness and sense of community when you're, you know, further afield in places like rural Victoria. They said this news had left them angry and wanting to advocate further for their queer community, but they were concerned for friends and peers. They said that they know it's definitely going to have a lot of negative impacts on young people who are questioning or trying to figure out who they are. This is a little bit of what Frankie had to say.
"I know that this is definitely going to have a lot of negative impacts on young people who are questioning or trying to figure out who they are."
Anna, now that the event has been postponed, what's been the response this morning?
Yeah, so the local LGBT LGBTQIA plus charity Lion Wangaratta, which promotes social inclusion and coordinates a lot of events across the region, have actually said they've been blown away by messages and emails they've received since this news broke. Of course, the event itself is being run by the council's youth services division, but they do run, you know, a lot of events locally, and they say there's been a lot of messages of support that have come forward, and that they'll be focusing on increasing their programs and activities sort of in the wake of this news.
Is it likely that the event will happen at a later date?
That's the latest information. And of course, the statement from council does stress that it's a delay. I noticed that the updated information about the event online does say that it will be a delay. The email that was sent out to those would-be attendees also says that the council is working really hard to reschedule this event and make sure it's, you know, an important celebration for all. That local charity I mentioned, Lion Wangaratta, they've thanked Victoria Police and the council in a statement for their support in postponing rather than cancelling this event so that the whole community can celebrate in safety. So I think delay is very much where things are at the moment.
Well, hopefully it'll go ahead. Anna Chisholm in Wodonga, thanks very much for talking to Australia Wide.
Thank you.
ABC Australia Wide.
If you thought modern electric bikes were for hipsters in the city, well, think again. Nathan Langer from the Northern Territory says e-bikes are perfect for hunting. He says they're super silent, they're extremely efficient, and he now rides his e-bike to hunt buffalo and feral pigs in the Top End.
G'day everyone, I'm Nathan Langer. I do a YouTube channel called Hunting NT. And this is my bachelor pad. It's just full of man toys like quads, dirt bikes, electric bikes, buffalo heads, boats, project cars, weight sets, beer fridge.
What's with the fake skeleton?
That's just someone to talk to while you're having beers on your own.
You got all the toys, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got plenty of. Look, that's the beauty of being single, you can have things.
We could go anywhere with you, I think, in terms of hunting or fishing, but I'm going to go back to the e-bike that's over there. Tell me about what purpose this serves for you.
I use it to go shoot buffalo and pigs and anywhere I don't want to have to pedal or have to get a big motorbike through. Because it's that light, you can pick it up, move it, and when you shoot buffalo on it, they can't hear you coming.
You're just driving as far in as you can, slinging the rifle over your shoulder, hopping on the e-bike, and then chasing bucks.
Yeah, just drive along the arterial tracks that the buffalo walk on or the pigs walk on, and hopefully you run. Well, the last one I did, I nearly ran right up its arse.
You reckon you're the first person that's using an e-bike to hunt buffs?
Oh, there's a possibility I am. I don't know if there's anyone else done it yet, but the whole thing is it has 120k range, so I can go out all day on that electric bike, make no sound, cruise down. I've got a quad there. As you can see, there's a 550 injected quad there. But I see the animals and they're already running. This thing here, you drive up to them and they look at you and go, oh, what are you doing there?
Nice e-bike.
Yeah.
So that's it. It's actually really about the stealth.
Stealth, yeah. It's a stealthy item. It's just where a motorbike has a big roaring motor, this has no sound whatsoever.
Can we fire it up?
Yeah. Let's see if we can get it to a burnout. It's doing 60, actually, it's doing right now, on the spot. Maybe it'll go faster if someone skinnier gets on it, because it only does about 55 or 54 now, huh? Normally, you used to walk 10 to 15 k's for a whole day's walk. This thing's good for, like, weeks out in the bush. Without charging it, so.
The other advantage to this one is that it actually folds up in the boot.
Yeah, it completely folds up, like half its size. And I normally just put it in the back seat passenger side. And then, you can take it anywhere. It's about the size of a suitcase when it's all folded up.
Have you had to do any mods on it that make it more of a hunting sort of machine?
No, but I've seen that now they have actual gun holders for the handlebars for them. And all that sort of stuff. I've seen it on other YouTube videos, and I'm like, maybe I get that next.
Well, I must have that.
Yeah, I'll get that. Pretty well, she's stock standard how she is. I just like how she folds up and she goes in the back seat of the car.
So what's going to happen to your quad if the e-bike's on the scene?
The quad's still for towing out the Tinian to the middle of nowhere to launch me boat into creeks that you can't get a car to.
Yes. How silly of me.
You still need a quad.
All right, Langer, well, I'm going to let you go. Look, keep us in the loop with regards to the success of the e-bike hunting. Yeah. That's very interesting.
Not a problem. We get something big this next one.
Thanks for having us over, bro.
Not a problem. Thanks.
Whoa, jeepers, Darwin local Nathan Langer speaking there to Mike Kermode. And that's all from the Australia-wide team. Myself and Alex Hyman, the producer of the show, will be back with you next week. I hope you have a lovely weekend. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.